You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Being the second Wednesday of the month, between 1 and 2, we have Archer Hutchinson Legal come in and talk to us about all legal matters and any questions you have. You could give us a ring right now and we'd be trying to get some answers for you. But this afternoon, it's my pleasure to introduce the big boss down there, Grant Hutchison. Welcome, Grant.
G'day, Alan. It's always good to be here. Am I on?
Yes, you are on.
Oh, good.
And that's not very professional. And we've got
I'm always on.
Well, I'm not touching that.
I didn't say turned on. I'm just saying I'm on rather than off.
You had me worried. And you have with you Sam, who's a placement down at the in the group of yours, which is called Your Lawyer. So welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much for having me.
We always reckon that if you can put up with me for an hour, well, you're probably not doing too bad. All right, I've got to ask you one thing before, because we want to go and get into the last month's question pretty quick. Sam, what made you decide you wanted to be a lawyer?
Oh, okay, well, how long we got?
Only a few seconds.
Only a few seconds. Money. No, that's a joke. That's a joke.
You took a look at Grant's style and thought, I got to make millions.
Yeah. No, I'm good at arguing.
Right, so you don't have a background in social justice or anything.
He's no good at arguing.
No, I firmly disagree with that. Well, yeah, it's not reason why.
We can have the whole program on.
No, we won't. So what generally made you get involved with law? Because it's a long course.
It is a long course. When I went into it, I wasn't sure, but something that I think I've realised I like about the law, particularly in Australia, is that the cases that you go through, it's like a tapestry of history, of like a society's history that you wouldn't otherwise get. You learn about people's lives and the issues that come up, and yep, being able to contribute to that, I find really rewarding. So that's like the philosophical reason why I follow law.
Sounds good. And the money doesn't go astray either. Anyway, I only said that because Grant picked that up. All right, so we had in the last month, which we've got another question for you to take away today, but it was about photography, and I know it was particular things. Can you just stop and photograph an old house if that's what you want, or do you have to go and get permission? If you, say, at the Melbourne Town Hall and you think that the architecture there is terrific and there are people walking past, can you take that? Because obviously you don't walk around with disclaimers in your pocket for people to sign. So what's the rules about photography in the marketplace?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll start with the first scenario, which is about you're driving through a country town and you find an old house.
Yep.
You then stop and take a photo. It's one of these ones where the answer's not going to be super exciting, because that's perfectly fine. It's like, do you have a right to take this photo? Yeah, there's no prescribed right that allows you, but nothing's stopping you. Right. And this extends pretty far. So I've got an example here of a classic case called Victoria Park Racing against Taylor from 1937.
1937?
Yeah, a while ago, yeah.
when you were young.
He's a mean man.
I've nothing to say there.
Oh, when your parents were young, sorry. Or even then, I don't know.
Keep going.
I'm going to turn his microphone off.
This is good. But no, there you have a race course who have built a fence and are trying to run their business, and then their next-door neighbour, Taylor, constructs a 5-metre-tall tower upon which a radio broadcasting place starts peering over the fence from it at the local race course and broadcast the races. Admissions go down to the race course and they try to get him to stop, and they try a number of different avenues, and one of them is, we have a right to privacy, and the court says, no, you don't. There's nothing to recognise there, and so Taylor gets away with it. They're allowed to do that. Right. So if you're trying to get someone to stop taking photos, it's difficult to pick a legal right that you have to enforce, because it doesn't exist.
So you don't, what I'm getting at, you don't have to, well, you couldn't get people to sign a waiver. So if you were, say, we'll say you're down the main street, Lilydale, and I want to take a photo of the whole street going down the main street, and there's a whole lot of people there, I can just take them.
Yeah, from all I understand, you don't have as a human being, you don't have the right to stop somebody capturing your likeness, be it through a camera. There's nothing to stop you doing that.
All right. Hope that answers the question.
Well, one case that I can refer you to that doesn't really develop the law but the practice, because I remember in the early days of Crown Casino, there was a community leader that was a community leader of a community that might not have been into gambling. And he or she was photographed going through, because we all know that there's signs everywhere that you can be photographed.
Yep.
But they used the image for promotion of the casino, and that caused this person severe embarrassment, because there was a photo of them
in
apparently
the casino
enjoying. And so what happened was that a complaint was made and Crown chose to take it down, as I understood. I understand the situation. But were they entitled to put it up? Absolutely. There was, you know, that A, they'd been warned.
B, it's a public place.
And C, so they were just... But anyway, sometimes the practical realities or the politics of the situation is it's better to take it down than risk offending a community.
Right, but in general, out in the public, you just can take photos.
Yeah, I think that's a great case, the 1937 case. I think we'll all be citing that to our friends.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And Steve, if you were listening, that's a Johnny O'Keefe song I've never heard before, so I hope you enjoyed it. Anyway, we're talking to the people from Hutchison Legal, both Grant and Sam.
It was a great song, a great toe-tapper.
Was it?
Or headbanger.
It was too. I know, back in those days, they weren't headbangers. anyway, let's get back to what we're talking about. So, Grant, you want to extend this idea of the photographs just a little bit further?
Yeah, look, I suppose one of the questions that I wanted to put to Sam, because he's on the spot, is what about, is there any restrictions?
He's only learning. Give him a go.
He's a newer product than I am. He's just out of... When I say just out of university, he's been educated so well.
Yep. Which correct.
Did you go to, by the way?
Melbourne University.
Melbourne, okay. So we can throw any question his way. What about if I was taking a photo of somebody else's photo or taking a photo of some artwork? Would there be any restrictions, or taking a photo of the Indigenous flag.
I'll just throw into this, down in Bay Street, Port Melbourne, because my daughter lives down there, and there's a jewellery shop that's got in the window, photography of any of our products is forbidden, but I don't know how you could police that.
I'm not sure. With this kind of stuff, it's a question about copyright, because unlike when we talk about taking photos of a person, you don't have copyright in how you look like. You don't own that copyright. For better or for worse. But when you have something that's like a painting or a photograph, indeed, they those things can be vested with copyright, and then you can breach that copyright by doing things that only the owner of the copyright can exclusively do. Right. So taking the photo of the painting is probably okay, but if you then go and try to sell that photo or to publish it, that's something that only the copyright owner should be allowed to do, and then that could be bad.
I remember seeing some photography of graffiti in Melbourne. And that was considered bad form because it was somebody else's artwork that they've created, and you're monetizing somebody else's. And graffiti by nature is normally not considered a monetized product. It's meant to be an expression of protest or an expression of a free type of expression that's left behind, and somebody else can do graffiti over your graffiti sometimes. So, but of course it changed, because then City of Melbourne started to pay people to do graffiti. What happens? I know when we were buying some artwork, some Indigenous artwork many years ago.
All the stuff that you bought. Yeah.
Well, look, if only it was that much. And it's hanging in my office for those who would like to have a look and take a photo. Not. So we asked and we obtained, because the copyright in the artwork belongs to the creator of it, not me, just because I purchased the artwork, but I was able to negotiate with the artist that we not only bought the artwork but the right to copy the artwork. And that was an important part of it. So I think it was Hillary Clinton who came out and was making it very clear many, many years ago when she was Secretary of State to the local population, make sure you understand that you own this and, you know, protect your rights, because just because you've sold it. So Albert Namatjira, I just think if he'd realised that nobody could copy it, and he owned it, because those prints went everywhere. They were in so many lounge rooms in the early days, but nobody thought to protect his rights. I would have thought, who knows? But let's not speculate. But so does that answer or just raise more questions?
That answers the question. So what are we going to move on to now?
Well, I'm happy to deal with anything you like. You know me, Alan, I'm a pretty versatile chap, but I've got a little thing called You Be the Judge. Would you like to do that?
Sounds good to me. Are you not asking me to come up with the answer?
Exactly. I am asking you to come up with the question. I'll put the problem to you and your listeners, and you decide what you would do if you were the judge in this case. So
right.
It's a case where there was an application for an extension of time to file a defence, put a defence in. Sounds simple, and basically, you look at the civil procedure rules, but this was the case of Roberts and the State of Victoria, a 2023 decision.
Well, it's a relatively new case.
Relatively. Well, it is a very new case for somebody as young as us. It was really about Jason Roberts had been convicted of murdering the police officers, Sergeant Gary Silk, the Wall Street, and Senior Constable Rodney Miller, and he was sentenced to life imprisonment with a minimum non-parole period of 35 years. So you'd think he's gone.
Yep.
But in 2020, the Court of Appeal granted Roberts leave to appeal against those convictions. They were subsequently quashed.
Yep.
And there was a retrial ordered. And in 2022, Roberts was acquitted of both murder charges by a jury. Okay. So that's the outcome. What do you do after that? And let's just say some people might speculate that, or he certainly felt the way he was treated by police officers and others wasn't with open arms.
Yep.
So he put a statement of claim together, making extensive allegations against numerous members of the police force, and it was seeking damages
for a tort, which is a wrong against him, including assault and battery, misfeasance in public office. And so he filed a statement of claim, and then the state of Victoria said, hey, we're going to need more time than our normal time to put a defence together. Oh. So, court, will you give us more time? So that's the basic, that's the...
Yeah.
So the things to consider, they said, look, already, you know, we have to look at a period from 1988 to 2022, and already we've got 38,000 documents that we've received. It's been received by our lawyer, the Victorian Government Solicitor, and we've got a further 12,000 hard copies to documents, 18 archive boxes yet to be received. And he said, we're going to have to be talking to 24 members of the Victoria Police, 14 of whom are no longer members, and the majority will require welfare support due to the documented medical conditions. So it created various difficulties, delays on them. So they said, give us more time. Give us more time. Because, and if you give us more time, they said, there's five good points. We'll have a really well-pleaded defence.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, you know, there's Christmas holidays coming. We need more time because there's Christmas coming up. You served, you know, this is in 29th of November we're making this. And also, over that time, operational police could be called on because there could be a bushfire. So we might need more time. And there's discovery obligations that are going on. It's exchanging documents, letting each other know what we've got. So in the interest of justice and enabling a properly considered and carefully pleaded defence, which is significant and sizable, and if you give us the more time, then it reduces the likelihood that we'll need to amend. So you be the judge. What would you decide?
I would give the time.
I know you would.
No, but the only reason I would give it, because at the end of the day, you want honesty to come out. You want it fair for him, but you want it fair for everybody.
Yep.
And if you chop it off, then justice might not necessarily be done. And I'm not saying he was guilty or he was innocent, but I would be fearful in any situation by chopping things off and saying, no, you're going to have it ready in time, because neither side is going to get a fair go, okay. I would have thought.
No, look, that's a carefully considered position, Judge Judy. Oh, Judge Allen, sorry.
No, and I only made that response. Now I'm going to throw it back on you.
Okay.
And as a lawyer, you will say, oh, yeah, give us more time.
That's right, to Sam.
But if no,
you... I'm doing the PLT,
Because you've had a lot more experience. I don't want you to answer as a lawyer, because a lawyer's going to say, oh, yeah, I want more time.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you were the judge, what would you do, Grant?
That's a real... See, I've read the where it goes, so I know the outcome.
No, okay, I'm not asking about the outcome.
You can pretend.
Okay, so I didn't know anything.
No.
So I didn't know the fact that, by definition, the state gets 60 days rather than the normal 30 days.
No.
I don't know that...
But the judge would know that, though.
Yeah, the judge would. And there's normally, by reason of Christmas, they're given extra days anyway, because there's certain days that don't count.
Yeah.
So let's say I know that. I would be persuaded somewhat by the state's position. If Jason Roberts said, look, I'm dying of cancer and I've only got so long to live, and then I'd say, no delay.
Yep.
Get on. You know,
agree with that. You're a
government. You've got the resources of the Victorian Solicitor's Office, and get on and do it. But if we're outside of that, you'd give extra time.
Well, because the other thing is, too, that I know the prosecutor, he just wants a conviction, but at the end of the day, if in that extra time he actually found something that said that this person was innocent, then he's obliged to make that known to the opposition as well, isn't he?
There is an obligation around the state government to be what's called a model litigant.
Yep.
So in everything they do, that same obligation isn't imposed on Jason Roberts. He's able to, but if you have the government department behind you, let me just give you some insight of what the judge said. Or do you want to do this after the break?
No.
It's exciting, isn't it? And it's like, it is almost like a you be the judge.
Yep.
So what would the listeners have decided if they were the judge?
Yep.
So we've given our opinion. The court said, first of all, look, those things I've already covered off.
Yep.
And they said, look, this excuse about this you say about the bushfires. We don't know whether there's going to be serious bushfires.
And that's a fair comment. And I think that's the weakest part of their argument.
Yeah, so they said, look, if you're having trouble with bushfires, let us know and we'll consider it when that happens.
Yeah.
But otherwise, they said, look, you get your 60 days rather than 30 days, you've got the Christmas period, how that works. And Roberts acknowledged, you know, the usefulness of having well-drafted and comprehensive defence, but he said, don't take that long. Don't give them as long as they've asked for. And the judge basically came down on Jason Roberts' position of basically saying, I'll give you a bit more time, but a month less than you're asking for.
All right, so how much were they asking for, Grant?
In November, they were asking until the end of March, next year.
So what did he cut it back to?
Until the end of February. So they probably got a couple of extra weeks.
Fair compromise, I suppose.
They basically looked at everything and considered all of the rules and basically gave them until the 29th of February rather than the 28th of March. So the court was satisfied that the outcome, the best promoted the overarching obligations of the Civil Procedure Act was granted by a more limited extension. So you be the judge.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Local events. Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, and we're talking to Grant and Sam. One thing that's coming up in the paper quite a bit lately, and I said at a meeting a couple of weeks ago where the police were there, and we were talking about something altogether, and they were talking about bail, and just over a cup of coffee, one of the police officers said, I've just arrested somebody, I think 2 days ago, and they went before the courts and they got bail, and it's their 17th time, so they got 17 bail charges against them. Like, how do they keep doing it?
Well, you've got to start from the initial premise, which is you're presumed innocent until proven in a court of being guilty. So every charge, there's a presumption of innocence. So let's...
17 times?
Well, let's not disparage the police that they could have got it wrong 17 times. Let's just say it does seem excessive.
Yep.
But remember that journalist who was killed by somebody out on bail? So, Jill Maher, or anyway, whatever her name was. It's a very, sorry, I shouldn't say it like that. Tragic situation that impacted the state of Victoria.
Yep.
We need to understand that bail is about giving, if you lock somebody up on charges before there's a finding of guilt, then aren't you effectively giving that person punishment or taking that person out of society before society has made a decision that guilt is in place? So the court balances these things. A more serious offence, they're more likely to not grant bail. Yeah. So let's say there was that case up in, was it Bendigo or Ballarat, the jogger.
There's been three in Ballarat in the last few weeks.
Well, let's not discuss any individual case, but we've got, I think, wasn't bail refused? Or wasn't I don't think it was applied for.
No.
Because I think they wanted to keep their powder dry for later in case they wanted to apply for it. So there's a time and a place. So very serious charges, less likely to get bail.
Yep.
And, of course, the time spent in jail or in prison.
Yep.
Well, that's actually, it's called on remand.
Yep. So,
yes. Alan knows these things. He's got inside knowledge, but I won't explain why. I'll let him.
Don't you dare.
Oh, no. It's not because he was inside. Sorry.
I should never be inside. Nothing to do.
Sorry, Alan. Well, let's just say your son might help you have greater understanding of the criminal justice system.
Let's keep moving.
If you're related to a police officer, you know more. Okay, let's keep going. So where did I get to before you distracted me?
We're talking about people getting continual bail and they're on remand.
Oh, well, if if they get bail, bail's basically saying there's conditions of your release and the bail might be that you have to report to the police or report to somebody. Now, that's different to parole. Parole
is different. I understand that. But there was a case last week where the person was bailed one night and rearrested again the next night. So,
I think it sounds conspicuously like there's need for reform in the area, but you start from the basic principles. Always start from the basic principles. Presumption of innocence until proven guilty. So if the person says, I was guilty, I did it, so there's confession and they want to have it dealt with quickly, there wouldn't be a problem. They'd be incarcerated if that was the sentence. Remember, most crimes, people don't get incarcerated. Most crimes are dealt with without time in prison.
Yeah, I know that the vast majority of people can't understand how you can get bail night after night, week after week. Once you've breached it twice, we'll say, you've got no... They're showing that I don't care what conditions you put on me, I'm not going to take any of those.
Well, let me add another layer to this, and that is there's talk of raising the age of criminal culpability from where it is at the moment to 14. Now, a kid of under 14 can do a lot of damage.
The other night was driving at 160 kilometres an hour.
So it wouldn't just be that bail, they couldn't be charged because they weren't guilty of enough, you know, the criminal culpability. To commit a crime, you need two things, a mens rea and actus reus. Would you pronounce the Latin for me properly, please, Sam?
Mens rea, actus rea.
See, that's better. One means the act that's wrong, and the other's the mind, the intention. Yep. So you've got to have both things, unless it's a strict liability. Like speeding, you don't need to intend it. You just need to do it, so that's enough. Just the act is sufficient, and there are exceptions. But basically, let's leave the raising of the age, which is problematic. I think the last Attorney General we had, which was, I'd say, tough on crime, was Robert Clark. He brought in what's called baseline sentencing, which basically said, look, if you... the judge just can't make up sentences anymore. There's a baseline that if you commit this crime, you're going to do this time, unless the judge can explain why, in overwhelming reasons, why it should go, you know, below that. Yep. You can go above that. So, and that was the last time an attorney general tried to take a little bit of the judicial discretion of not letting things go to prison away from the judges to a limited nature or a limited way. But anyway, he was an attorney general who wanted to clear up some of these things, and I'm sure if he was there for longer, he might have done other things in that space. But anyway, we have the government we have, and we need to work with them for the best outcome for the state of Victoria.
All right, I've got to go. Quick break. We're back with more.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I should make the comment that while we have a lot of fun with Grant, at the end of the day, Grant is only here to explain the law to us. He might not have the same views on bail that we were talking about, but at the end of the day, it's what the law is, and anyway, I'm going to cause trouble with the judges. Right, now we've got a question, and this has got about three questions. Grant, you probably live in Toorak. I don't live in Toorak, but anyway...
Well, where's Toorak?
It doesn't matter. The council, out the front of your house, the council own the footpath. That's council property. The nature strip is council property because they tell us if we don't cut the grass, we're not allowed to park on it so they can fine us. And the guttering and the side of the road is owned by the council. That's all there. So from your front fence out to the road, council owns.
Yep.
Who owns the four slabs between the footpath and the guttering on your drive? Is that council land? So do they own that? So we need to know, we want to know, or the listener wants to know, first of all, do they own it?
So the driveway.
Yeah, the actual driveway, yeah. But between the footpath and the guttering. Mm. All right. So now, on all estates, your fresh water runs down underneath...
This is the second question.
Yeah, well, this is all part of the same question. Your fresh water runs down under the nature strip on one side of the road. If you live on the other side of the road, the water runs under the road to your house, right? So because the water now runs under the foot, under the nature strip, does that... That's not me this time.
Sam.
Sorry, guys.
So does that change it? Does that make it an easement? Because if I'm always told, and I've got an easement through the back of my house, that if you put anything on it, a shed or you concrete it, if the municipality, not the municipality, whatever organisation, the old board of works, have to dig it up, that's your bad luck. They don't have to replace it. So now we're not going to...
They might even charge you for...
Well, they could, for taking it away. But anyway, let's keep back to the question. So underneath your nature strip, underneath that drive is your water pipe on one side of the road.
Sure.
So a pipe burst, and I'm not having to go at the water boards because they come out and do it. And if you've had a water pipe burst, you can't wait to see the flashing lights come and know they're going to... They smash that concrete.
Yep.
Whose responsibility is replaced? It's not the border. It's not the water people because they're just looking after their pipe. Is it the council, or because it's an easement, does that alter it, and therefore you have the homeowner has to repay it for that concrete? So that's the second question. Third question is, do you then have two different rules? Because if you're on the side of the road that's got the water pipe, if that's declared as an easement, the person on the other side of the road doesn't have an easement. So does that alter it? So if you've got two sorts of rules, one for each side of the road? Fascinating question.
We won't answer it now, but I will ask a question just to help us. Did somebody ring before they dig? Was this a spontaneous...
No, it just burst.
But if somebody... The answer might be different. Do you want us to also consider if somebody was digging and they hit the pipe? Even if it like there might be a pipe you hit without going through concrete first.
Yep. Yeah, so, well, look at that as well. Yeah, but this other one is mainly the water pipes burst.
So spontaneous burst.
Spontaneous burst. And as I said, the water company, you can't wait to see that flashing light when they come to repair it because you want to get your water back on a quick spot. But who's responsible? And do we have two different rules, one for the side where the water is and one for when it's not?
It's a great question, Sam, isn't it? Alan knows that we know the answer to everything without looking it up. But
yeah, I'm going to leave it to next month.
Yeah, exactly. I think we should leave the listeners in suspense. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to kick out the last
great
song
question.
Because,
okay.
No, we're going to have another song. We've only done four, but that's enough.
I thought you'd play something about I Took on the Law and the Law Won.
Could do that. But more importantly, elder abuse. You want to talk about that, Grant? And don't look at me when you say elder.
No. I wouldn't think of it when I see you, Alan, and you're such a sprightly young man. I'm surprised you don't get more Facebook likes.
Recognition.
So it's coming up in June, but it's always a good time to be thinking about elder abuse. And look, we don't want to leave on a dark topic, but we as a society need to take better care of our aged people that are in needing care rather than needing exploitation.
Right. Now, But let's just quickly put this to you. Elder abuse isn't just necessarily someone walking up and hitting an old person, is it? It's a lot more than that.
That's an assault, by the way. That's a criminal act. But right. And don't do it because you won't get bail.
That's not that.
All right, back on there.
Sam, you know, like we've all got family situations, but what do you see? It's care of older people is a tough gig.
It's for both the families and the people that are employed to work in the care of old people, it's it can be very tough, but it's very important work, and I want to honour those people. But the elder abuse can take many different forms, not just the physical violence. It could be financial.
I was just going to say, it can be financial too,
a big one, and it's very difficult to spot when it happens, but it's something to always, and it can, the transition from something that's good to elder abuse can sometimes be difficult to spot.
Can I just say this to you? Would this be elder abuse? You've got a son or a daughter. I know you need. You'll know the answer straight away. You've got a son or a daughter. They're a bit short of money, and they come home and they say, "Right, Mum or Dad, I want $10,000." And you say, "I buzz off," and they turn around and say, "Well, if you don't give me that $10,000, you'll never see your grandkids again." Is that elder abuse?
Well, clearly it's blackmail, and the issue, I suppose there'd be a few issues. Did you have an ongoing relationship with your grandchildren? Because if you haven't, it would be hard to see that as a taking something away from you.
Yep.
But the very way that it's termed is really putting you, it's coercing, it's a sense of coercion, it's a sense of creating an emotional blackmail.
But would that still be elder abuse?
Absolutely. I need to be careful because every case is different.
Yeah.
Because things can be said. So if you had a healthy ongoing relationship with the grandchildren and you enjoyed that, and then that was being threatened, pay me money or you don't see your grandchildren, I would have thought that would fall within that. But if you haven't had a relationship and you haven't seen them for years, I would have thought that's very hard to say that that's just an abusive situation. It could be, it might not be. It really, who knows, the grandparents may feel relieved. They may not like their grandchildren. To say you're not going to see them might be, whew. So it would depend on the circumstances. But so it's not a simple yes or no.
Yep.
I know it may sound like I'm a lawyer, but every case is different. Every case.
Yep.
I suppose the difficulty is this. More when somebody gets on hard times and they say, "Can I move in with you, myself, my wife and my kids? Because, you know, Dad's gone, you're alone, Mum. Can we move into the house?" It starts off, she stays in the main bedroom and everyone tiptoes around her. And by the end, 3 years later, she's in the back bungalow and... And don't you dare come out, Mum. Now, when did it turn to elder abuse?
Yeah, I was going to ask her.
Clearly, at the end, you know it.
Yep.
But each of the stages is probably a case of elder abuse. It's depriving and taking away rights.
Yep.
But it could have been done. The hard thing is the grandmother or the mother doesn't want to expose their own child as an abuser.
Yep.
And so very hard to police, very hard to get involved in. But just as it was with domestic violence in the 50s and 60s,
yep.
We need as a society to recognise the seriousness of what's involved.
Because that's changed, hasn't it?
Absolutely, it's changed.
For
it
the
used
better.
To be the police would turn up and the wife might say at the front door, "Go away, go away." And they would go away. Now, they wouldn't go away.
No.
They want to talk to the guy, they want to do something.
Yep.
So it's far more proactive and interventionist. And I think we probably need that, but let's leave that for another day. We've got next month is June, still before International Elder Abuse Day.
Yep.
And by the way, the elder abuse is not an invitation to do something wrong. It's a recognition of what's going on, and hopefully... but it's been great being with you. I noticed you haven't shared your chocolates with us.
I don't, never eat them. So there we are.
Oh, okay.
He's not frightened to ask. Look, Grant, it's terrific to have you. The time the time's gone. News is there. So thank you, Sam, and thank you, Grant. And we look forward to someone next month.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.